It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this prayer meeting Wednesday, the first day of April 2020. It is April Fool's Day. There will be no April Fools this year. That's because when you've got a pandemic running and April Fools at the same time, any practical jokes, pranks, or anything like that are a matter of begging the goddess of irony to tweak you on your little pink tomato nose. Yes, so, no, there will be anything that happens here is pretty much just another straightforward program. I say this because Brother Deacon Asa, who has a genuinely sick sense of humor, and I mean that in the best possible way, was trying to talk me into a... No. Absolutely not. No. I mean, it is April Fool's Day, and if I had the social media abilities, yes, I would have put out some sort of fake news statement from some made up physician saying that COVID-19 could be avoided by sucking on a baby's pacifier at all times, and if it could have gotten legs. You would, and we could have properly attributed it, and you know, the right kind of fake backup and everything. You would have seen people with their fucking maggot hats wandering all over Walmart, sucking away on a binky. And wouldn't that have been a beautiful thing? Yes, it would have been a beautiful thing. But I'm not doing that. Although I am convinced that as a thought experiment, it would work. The maggots will do anything they are told to do as long as they think their God Emperor wants them to. You gotta admit, it'd be funny. Maybe a Mickey Mouse or a Minnie Mouse, Binky, or a Donald Duck, or maybe Rugrats or SpongeBob SquarePants, and just, you know, sucking away as they're... Because, you know, they're maggots. And all they know how to do is follow, because they're little authoritarians. So that's how it goes. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And so if you'd like to be part of it, since we're socially distancing the congregation and I'm the only one here in the cathedral this evening, feel free, if you'd like to participate in the virtual congregation, to run on over to headon.live. And click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in, because pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan is moderating this evening. Sparky takes Wednesdays off, like doctors. Well, not except during the pandemic, of course. No, Sparky just hates the religious shit. I understand. But if you do jump in, you'll be moderated by Steve, and you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Bucko and House of Roberts and Nels and Roger and Squeaky And Nels is a first-timer in the room. Good evening, Nels, from across the pond in the UK. Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard, and many happy returns. And stay safe, and all the things that we're telling each other during the, you know, freaking plague. But it is the first day of April, and every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude because we don't have any advertisers. We're not imploring you to buy anything. I was watching a news program last night after the program. I won't say which one. And it was, and so there was this tease. That's what they're called in the business. They're called teases. And hey, something really awesome. And we'll only tell you when we get back from 5 minutes of commercials for shit you don't need. Well, that doesn't happen here. We start the program promptly, most occasions, at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we go straight through to 8 or 8:30, sometimes 9, just depending on what the needs of the conversation and the community are on any given evening. And we don't stop the program to implore anyone to buy gold now or purchase a vacuum cleaner that'll pick up a bowling ball off of a mattress that was made of Swedish foam developed by NASA and is housed in a steel building on hardwood floors, raped from out of some desperate South Pacific nation. We don't do that here. No, this program happens because of the kindness of the audience who make it possible for the horn to be offered to anyone who wants to hear it, and we never send a bill. And so thanks go out to our first day of the month subscribers via PayPal. Thank you very kindly indeed to our buddy Tom in the Bay Area, in sunny San Rafael, as a matter of fact. Tom in sunny San Rafael jumped in this today. And thanks to Rusty and our friends at Home Dirts. And thank you to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thanks to Joseph, and thanks to all of you who kick in on an a la carte basis as well to keep this all going. This is going to be a brutal month. I've got a feeling, but we've got a chance to get a little bit of a leg up on it because thanks to Gary Laborman, whom you heard from last night, and thanks to Ralphs, and thanks to an anonymous contributor, the first program of every new month is done in memory of our dear friend Bruce in Wisconsin, who passed on some years back, but who had sponsored a challenge at the first of every month to get us up on get a good leg up on the coming month's fundraising. So there's a $200 challenge on the table, and if it's met, that means, you know, your money's doubled. Your 10 becomes 20, 20, 40, 50, 100, up to $200, and that's how it works. It'd be great if we jumped in and got that wiped out as quickly as possible. What's that, Brother Usher Steve? Brother Usher Steve says, selling nothing you don't need. Does that include sex clams? I really love my sex clams. They clear up toe fungus quite nicely. I had no idea you could do that with sex clams. And you don't really want to know what I do know you can do with sex clams. Mm-mm. So, the PayPal link and the Patreon and all of that is over at headon.live. Run on over, jump in, and help keep independent progressive broadcasting afloat if you feel so inclined and you are able to do it. Little notes from here and there. Terry in Saigon is back. Terry was back here in the stateside for a little while, but now he's back in Saigon. Self-isolated in Saigon. Our lockdown just started today. We can go to supermarket and pharmacy. Must wear a mask. Vietnam's really done a great job with the virus. I have many doctors and pharma people in my conversation classes. Plenty of food to be had. These are very resourceful people. I've changed my classes to online Skype. All medical expenses associated with the virus are free to Vietnamese citizens. Foreigners must pay for treatment. It's very cheap, though. 97 degrees Fahrenheit every day now. I'm so grateful to be here. The Mekong Delta is a source of more food than any other place I've ever seen. Same for the South China Sea with seafood. The Chinese are taking this opportunity to bolster the islands they've stolen. Good luck to all. And all are going
to need it, without a doubt. Still, a steam, even in 97 degrees, Terry, a steaming hot bowl of blazing, fiercely spicy, wonderfully seasoned pho would be just fine right now. I don't know that there's a bad time for a big, wonderful, blazing hot bowl of pho. It's just one of those things. It's a comfort food as far as I'm concerned. And we have some good news from Ralph's up in Wisconsin. My mom, Ralph said, got out of the hospital on Monday, and she's in rehab for a few days. East Castle is still under quarantine, so I'm here. And glad we are that you are, Ralph. Thank you so very much for letting us know how your mom's doing. We are keeping her in our thoughts. Don't do prayers around here. At least I don't. It would be hypocritical of me to say otherwise. But I have the deepest and most abiding hopes that your mom recuperates nicely and fully. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. The deacons, of course, are, you know, I don't even know if they're going to be mobile anymore by the time this pandemic is over. Because, well, the longer they're sedentary, well, you know the laws of motion. Bodies in motion tend to remain in motion, and bodies at rest tend to remain at rest. We got some deeply restful deacons going on right now, so there's no congregation in the cathedral. It's just me here in the cathedral office, not even bothering to put on the cassock and the habit and all the tomfoolery that goes with it, and wander down to the no. Little old blue-haired ladies are bored out of their minds, so they at least brought me a hot dinner for after the program's over with. And They're doing goodly works by cooking in the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall, and then the little old blue-haired men are very carefully and socially distantly taking to-go plates, to-go boxes, out to the congregation. They made individual little chicken pot pies today. And little old blue-haired ladies don't cheat. None of this stuff coming from the freezer or anything. You can tell when the little old blue-haired ladies have made a crust, and you can tell when they've made the chicken pot pie because it's got a bottom crust. Cheap bastards in the frozen foods industry. No bottom crust on the pot pies. Well, this stuff had a bottom crust, and all the peas and potatoes and little chunks of pearl onions and carrots and hunks of chicken and that gorgeous flaky crust. And so I've got one that I can heat up as soon as the program's over. And I'm sure they're already planning for what they're going to do for next prayer meeting Wednesday. But there's really no reason for an offertory hymn. And besides that, the minister of music is ministering from home, and it doesn't really work well over the audio that we have set up here, so we'll dispense with that as well. But nonetheless, I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Munificent Mullah, the Ginormous Guru, Bob Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, when we take a long and sometimes infuriated and always astonished and sometimes lighthearted look at the religion industry. And, well, there's just something about a pandemic that brings out the absolute worst in the evangelicals. You know, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Resourceful indeed, says our buddy Rusty. April Fool's Day, Lee in New York, says, I remember Alan Funt suggesting this prank. Put a sign on the wall that says dry paint and watch people go and touch the wall. My 2020 COVID-19 version. Put a sign on the wall that says free virus here with an arrow pointing to a picture of a bottle of Corona beer. That would be funny. It would be even funnier to say free virus here with an arrow pointing to a picture of, how about President Idi Amin? Yeah, that's my first time using that, and it really, really does work well. Have we gotten into the evening shit show? I don't know. Sparky's probably out there paying attention to some degree or another, and might let me know. We forewent it yesterday, and didn't seem any of the worse for wear. And in point of fact, I had a lot of feedback on my conversation with Dr. McCauley. With people saying that that conversation was extremely valuable to them, and that they appreciated the depth and breadth of the discussion that we had, and I'll be looking to put some more of those kinds of conversations together as we go forward. Let's see here. Dennis from Columbus says Donald ostrich Trump because he had his head in the sand, or maybe somewhere else about the coronavirus. For weeks, yeah, ostrich. Hung Like Jesus lets us know that the illegitimate governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, finally just did a statewide shelter in place in Georgia, says Hung Like Jesus. Well, he was following his buddy Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis. And I've got a long history of giving credit where credit is due, and I got up this morning and I participated in my filthy morning habit. You know what it is, that gang of multimillionaires who sit around and tell us what to think Monday through Friday over at MSNBC. And Joe Scarborough gets a lot of stuff dramatically and intensely wrong. Yeah, I like that stuff. Randy in PA reminding me, Campbell's has a chicken pot pie chunky soup, but it has dumplings instead of crusts. I do. I like that. But, a homemade chicken pot pie with a real live, honest-to-God flaky pie crust, all golden brown. And, you know, you can kind of cheat by getting the frozen frozen phyllo dough or frozen puff pastry crust. And I've done chicken pot pies with those in the past, and it works very well. It's just phyllo dough is kind of a pain in the ass because you got to separate each one of the little layers and the butter and lay it down and butter again and lay it down. It gets kind of fattening after a while, too. Look, it's Wednesday. We can get into the food porn a little bit. Let's see here. Email. I should probably offer a gross of rubber chickens to the goddess of irony. This morning when I called Christine, when I'd informed her that Mike Pence was in a tragic speedboat accident on the Potomac, she questioned me about how it happened, and I told her that the former governor and enabler-in-chief was out walking his duck on the Potomac early this morning. Just an April Fool's greeting from the blind. Enjoy the rest of your program. Your buddy Dave, riding from the blind in Talibah, Indiana. No, that's good. That's high quality, a tragic speedboat accident. On the other hand, Dave, do please be careful, because I was looking at the Johns Hopkins site, and I confess that I had not checked in on Talibah, Indiana in a while. And when I did, I found myself sad and surprised. Well, not surprised. But Marion County, Indiana, which I take to be the county in which Talibah, Indianapolis is located, has 1,117 reported cases of COVID-19 and 21 deaths. That's immensely sad and not at all surprising, because remember, Talibah, Indiana has a history, especially under Mike Pencil Neck Geek, of not handling disease outbreaks at all well. Yeah, he let one, what was it, Scott County? Burn up with HIV for a nice long while before he finally decided to intervene because he wasn't sure if Jesus didn't just want those Homer sectionals to go to hell. Right. What? Oh, you know, we may be in a pandemic, but you can take the April Fools out of the pandemic, but you can't take the pandemic out of the April Fools, I guess. Cowbell. And by the way, Dave from the Blind was entitled to a cowbell earlier, and so another cowbell for Randy in PA. Actually, Pence impaled himself on his cross. Yow! It's gonna hurt. No, I've not had Thrasher's pot pie, Steve, from New York. Has it got a bottom crust? That's really the gold standard of frozen pot pies for me. A bottom crust. I'm just odd that way, I guess. But no, as I pondered the map earlier today, it's hard to avoid the realization that the places where interstates intersect tend to have the biggest dots. How about that? Of course, most of those places also have airports. But with not that many people flying right now, you got to think it's just running the roads. And since West Virginia doesn't have so much in the way, well, since we're just so intensely rural, maybe that's why we're behind the curve where we stand now. Kanawha County, West Virginia, which is to my west, has 31 confirmed cases. Beckley, which is to my south, Raleigh County, has 3. And mercifully, still no cases reported in my little county. That can't last. And it's a fearsome thing to ponder. I read a heartbreaking letter that a doctor had written to her daughter, who was little, too little to comprehend. And she put it out in the world just so people could appreciate what healthcare workers in this country are going through. It was a letter to her daughter should she not survive the pandemic. And I won't kid you, I sat here reading it, and before I knew it, the tears were running down my face. Because I think I wouldn't be human if they hadn't been. No. But anyway, back to my filthy morning habit. I woke up, and it happens this way a lot of the time. For some reason or another, my eyes go blink, and they're open at about 5:50 a.m. I hate the idea that maybe I've trained myself to wake up in time to get this. It all changed when I was in Central Time for a little while. I'd completely miss the program sometimes because it was over by 8, and I'd be up late working on lines and things like that. Not the kind of lines that Nitwit Nero works on. Not those kind of lines. Yeah, that's why I'm so stopped up. And so I sleep through. But I'm back sot in my ways. And so there it was, 5:50 a.m., which gives me enough time to go in, get myself a cup of coffee going, get back before the thing begins. And it felt like that Joe Scarborough spent pretty much the 3 hours of the morning excoriating the illegitimate governor of Florida, that would be Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, for his failure to issue a stay-at-home order. Because he hadn't. But, of course, neither had Brian Kemp, his neighbor in Georgia, and neither had McGubna up in South Carolina, Stan. We value life in Alabama. Ivy, the governor of Talabama, no stay-at-home order. The same for Colonel Trent Reeves there in Mississippistan, and Ranger Greg Abbott in Texas, no stay-at-home order. Oklahoma, no stay-at-home order. Tennessee, no stay-at-home order. Arkansas, I got no idea who their governor is. Sorry. No stay-at-home order, which is kind of ironic given that Tom Cotton, Senator Tom Cotton, is being huzzahed by the white wing corner of the media for having first noticed that there was a problem with a disease coming from China. Never mind that he went on to say that it was a bioweapon that got loose from a bioweapons lab in Wuhan, but nonetheless, there's no stay-at-home order unless say, Reggie from Arkansas or Haley from Arkansas tells me different. There's no statewide stay-at-home order there. Missouri, as Carol Baker can clearly attest, doesn't have one. In other words, it's pretty much the Confederacy attacking the United States again. Because if you heard my conversation with Dr. McCauley last night, you'll recall he said, I'm rather a militant public health specialist, and said that if you're going out there and flouting the need to stay at home and flatten the curve, you might as well be carrying a gun and shooting at people. Well, I'm paraphrasing, and please let's not whisper any ideas into the into the ear of the goddess of irony. But the object of Joe Scarborough's ire this morning was, in fact, the illegitimate governor of Florida, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the man who only became governor with the connivance of white supremacists and actual Nazis. And I want to ponder an alternate universe scenario for a moment here, if we may. Imagine, if you will, you know, because the physicists who sit around and think about things that we can barely even contemplate tell us that we don't have a universe, uni meaning one, we have a multiverse, that there are universes stacked on universes stacked on universes, like pages in a book. They might all be in the same book, but the content of any one page laying against another page, they're not identical. So from time to time, I ponder alternate universes. And so this morning I was pondering an alternate universe where, say, there's a Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis who gets elected governor of Florida, looks at the returns, looks at the demographics, looks at the solid the psychographics, and says, "Hey, wait. I wanted to be governor and everything, and I wanted to win, but I don't want anything to do with a bunch of godforsaken Klansmen and white supremacists. This is nasty. I'm going to hand it over to my opponent, because I don't have any business being governor of the state if the only way I can become governor of the state is by having Nazis and Klansmen vote for me. For I do not wish to go down in history being remembered as a guy who became governor of this state because of Nazis and Klansmen." That would be both a politician and a state worthy of the adulation of history. It is also very much not the universe in which we live.
where Republicans look at each other and say, hey, look, whatever it takes to win. I mean, come on, we're the Republican Party. If we don't have Nazis and white supremacists, we're not a political party anymore. We're just another, well, we're the Whigs. When's the last time you saw a Whig in office? Right. And so anytime you talk about the governor of Florida, anytime I talk about him, I refer to him as Ron Monkey Up, and that refers to his racist babble about his African-American opponent in the general election in 2016 in Florida. I refer to him as Ron Monkey Up DeClantis because of the vast numbers of white supremacist robocalls that were put out on his behalf and in order to encourage others to vote for him and bring out the white supremacist vote so that there could be a white supremacist supported, or at least white supremacist adjacent, governor in the state of Florida. And Ron Monkey Up DeClantis has proven to be everything you would expect from a white supremacist adjacent Florida governor. He let the spring breakers run wild all over his state, carry the virus all over his state, transmit the virus, leave the virus laying around, party with the virus, what have you. He let cruise ships come in, dock, depart, load up, whatever. And all he could think, but you know, because he's a Republican, was about money. Because Republicans, like the Spanish conquistadors of old, suffer from a disease of the heart that can be cured only with gold. And so he's put forward platitudes about how not everywhere has it and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we don't want to wreck the economy. Now, this is another one of those right wing assholes with a Harvard education. More and more and more, I'm getting the idea that a Harvard education isn't really as valuable as Harvard would like you to think it is, because they keep letting people, they keep conferring degrees on people that I wouldn't let through the front door of my house, let alone into an institution of higher learning, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis being one of them. But bless his little heart, Joe has a soft spot for Florida because, well, among other things, I think he went to law school at the University of Florida. He's Gator, you know. And, of course, then he went on to be a member of the House of Representatives from the part of the Florida panhandle that we refer to as Lower Alabama or the Redneck Riviera. And today he decided that he was, as previously mentioned, going to hang an albatross or 12 around the neck of Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. And like I said, I give credit where credit is due. Click.
Federal government. He's waiting for guidance on the task force. As we talk about Florida, one of the coming hot spots in this pandemic, well, President Trump has a close relationship with Governor DeSantis. If Governor DeSantis really isn't perceptive enough to see where this is headed and what it could do to his state, we should implore the president to make that phone call to Governor DeSantis. If he's in fact waiting by the phone for Donald Trump to tell him what to do, please, Mr. President, call the governor and tell him what to do, because my gosh, it's coming to Florida and it's coming fast. Dr. Emanuel, I did want to ask you about a question that was posed at the news conference yesterday, which is this. If we had put in place, if the federal government had put in place mitigation efforts earlier, if the federal government had taken this more seriously a month ago, 2 months ago, would we not be looking at this staggering curve that shows the potential for 100,000 to 240,000 deaths, as you point out, in a best case scenario? So I'll ask you that question. If we had taken this seriously as the federal government much earlier, what would that number look like compared to what it is today?
Well, it's, I mean, again, the 100,000 to 250 is a best case scenario. I'm right. not a modeler, and I'm not privileged to the modeling at the moment. But it's certainly, again, remember, part of it is how high that curve is, how many people die. Part of it is how much it's spread out, so you don't have the mayhem you have in New York City hospitals at the moment. It's certainly the case 2 months ago, if we had done these social distancing measures and this physical distancing mitigation measures, we would have probably been able to keep that peak much lower and spread it out so we wouldn't have chaos, the fighting for ventilators, the lack of PPE, and all the other things that have come with it. The exact peak, Willie, I can't tell you what it would have been. But if
you know what, I can tell you this much. If we had gotten started sooner, among other things, we might have flattened this out here, for instance, in almost level West by Cold Trump Juniorstan, so that the economy that keeps my county going wouldn't be coughing up blood on the back stoop right now. I had to go down to the settlements for provisions, otherwise known as I had to go get water. And it was downright eerie to drive through Little Fayetteville. They've still got the sign up that says coolest small town because some magazine said they were. And doggone it, Fayetteville is pretty cool. And it's as cool as it is because of a lot of people who have come in from somewhere else and made it that cool. And they are all worried sick. They're worried about losing, they're worried about the disease, and they're worried about what's left after the disease has passed. But we could be talking about making this a lot less painful had we been a lot more intelligent about it. So that's the expert there, laying the groundwork. But they get done with him,
and then
Joe begins to lay into Ron Monkey Up Duplantis. Lord God, I mean he just pummeled him. He beat him and beat him and beat him. And if you ponder the idea that maybe Ron Monkey Up Duplantis actually tuned the program in, whew, it must have been awful.
White House, that if we don't actually act, we could have basically double the number of Americans who die in a year. And I think that if there's anything that should be sobering and really make people fearful, it's that number. That this is what happens if Florida is the norm and we don't adopt what has happened in Seattle or San Francisco as the norm. And I think that's the choice we have.
Yeah. Well, if Ron DeSantis, Mr. President, is too much of a coward to shut down the state of Florida on his own, you need to give him a call today and tell him to shut down the state of Florida. Are there going to be a lot of dead senior citizens that are going to have to be buried over the next several months because of this inaction? And that's science. That's data. That's not politics. It's Republicans as well as Democrats, independents that are going to die. People in the greatest generation, a lot of them who were born in World War II, who grew up like my parents during the Great Depression and grew up, were young during World War II and helped build the American century. Those are the people who are being betrayed and abandoned right now because the governor of the state of Florida won't shut down beaches and sandbars. And I tell you, last weekend, I saw pictures from last weekend, the sandbars were still packed. And by the way, Mr. President, a lot of Trump flags on the boats at the sandbars with people acting like total jackasses, infecting each other, taking those infections home, infecting their parents and infecting their grandparents and sending them to hospitals. Think about that.
That's not good.
Think
branding.
About that. That's
I don't
happening.
Know what gets through
That's
to him.
Happening every weekend in Florida. The recklessness is just unbelievable. So please call Ron DeSantis. since he doesn't have a backbone, apparently, since he still can't see everything that's been happening over the past couple of months and still won't do what is required to save senior citizens from this hellish end to their life, dying alone,
right.
Dying alone. Give him a call today, Mr. President, and tell him to do the right thing and shut down Florida. This impacts you, too. If you don't want to do it for the right reason, do it for the political reason. So, Jim Vandehei, we all know what a mess.
And that was just that segment. He would return to it two or three times during the course of the program and just beat on Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis a little bit more. If it had been a boxing match, the ref would have walked in and waved off the fight on a TKO. Because Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis must have been reeling, being hammered by his brother Republican there. And then something amazing happened. Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the illegitimate, white supremacist-adjacent governor of Florida, he issued a stay-at-home order statewide. And then, as noted, as Hung Like Jesus told us, his ideological and philosophical and demagogical brother, Brian Kemp of Georgia, acted similarly. But don't get all worked up. I mean, it's not like this was a road to Damascus thing, because later in the day, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the illegitimate white supremacist adjacent governor of Florida, went on to fuck up anyway. Because see, off the Florida shore, there is a plague ship by name MS Zandam. It is a sister ship to a vessel that Agnes and I and Margie and Ferg and Doodle were on some many years ago when Progressive Voices hosted what we came to refer to as the Libboat Cruise. And that was the MS Eurodammit. Okay, I added the it part, the Eurodammit. Lovely ship, but not one of the great big giant humongous. Holland America Line runs smaller ships. They're a little more intimate and a little less crowded and a little less kitschy. And we toddled all over the Caribbean. Well, the Eastern Caribbean. We went down to Grand Turk and then wandered over to Puerto Rico and then U.S. Virgin Islands and then stopped off on a private island in the Bahamas and then made it back to Fort Lauderdale. Well, her sister ship, the Zandam, has been wandering around the Caribbean and the even transited the Panama Canal, trying desperately to find somewhere to make port. And in that time, it has become a plague ship. Because among other things, there are dead people aboard the Zandam now. And so it's been in limbo in a holding pattern off the coast of Florida, hoping to pull back into what is its ordinary home port this time of year in Fort Lauderdale and disembark its passengers. The only problem is it's a plague ship. And there are 1,250 passengers aboard. 250 of them are Americans from states other than Florida. 400 of them are Canadians. And Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, the illegitimate white supremacist adjacent governor of Florida, has said, fuck you, to everyone but 49 Floridians on board the Zondam. The other 250 Americans can go fuck themselves. And the 400 Canadians can go fuck themselves, A. They're going to be forced to remain aboard the plague ship as the virus continues to make its way from stateroom to stateroom. And people are under orders to quarantine inside their own, inside their staterooms. By way of excuse, DeKlantis said that we cannot afford to have people who are not even Floridians dumped into South Florida using up those valuable resources. Now, this comes after we found out that while Michigan has had to go begging, while Andrew Cuomo of New York is doing everything short of getting on his knees and weeping for want of medical supplies from the federal government, whatever Florida has asked for, Corona Caligula's administration has gladly sent them with a smart little salute and a click of the heels. And along the way, of course, it was party time along the beaches and sandbars, as Joe Scarborough noted. And the ships have come and the ships have gone. And, it, you know, it makes a tremendous amount of money having those ships make places like Fort Lauderdale their home port. There are 9 positive tested COVID-19 victims aboard the Zondam plague ship, 2 dead. 179 people have flu-like symptoms but haven't been tested. 63-year-old Ohio artist Andrea Anderson is one of those trapped aboard the plague ship, and she said, I don't know if they're going to accept us. I hope they do. We need to get off this ship. That from a story published at NBC News. That's some leader, that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, telling 250 of his fellow Americans that he frankly doesn't give a fuck what happens to them, let alone the 400 Canadians. See, that's 650 plus 49. That's 699. That leaves another 600 passengers from elsewhere about whom Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis could not care less. Can you imagine being in that trapped aboard that hellish plague ship? As I suspected, Sparky is taking one for the team and says there is no COVID-19 talk at the shit show this evening. They're talking about the war against the Mexican cartels. What the fuck? Well, this has just turned into all this ever has been is another form of Binky. It's his whoopee. This is what he gets to do instead of holding his little clavern rallies a couple of times a week. Because somewhere along the way, someone has set their foot down. They had to force him not to hold his clavern rallies. Oh, Jesus. Sparky says
A.G. Bill Pepe the Frog Barr, and the military generals are there blabbing away. Oof. Oh, and speaking of plague ships, the Navy has one, too. This is horrifying. The USS Theodore Roosevelt, and I referenced this last night, night before, probably night before. USS Theodore Roosevelt is stricken. Her crew is stricken with plague. And the captain of the vessel, and a captain at sea on a naval vessel is the nearest thing this planet has to God Almighty. And in the days before electronic communications, radio and whatnot, the difference between a captain of a ship at sea and God Almighty, he was pretty hard to determine. But Captain Brent Crozier, I think is his name, has 4,000 oath-sworn sailors and Marines aboard his vessel under his command. They're sick and getting sicker. They live literally, they sleep on top of one another in berths that are not exactly real estate rich. Hell, even the captain's quarters are somewhat modest. And he knows, the captain does, that there is no way that he can follow social distancing guidelines and protect his crew. And so he has said that his crew desperately needs to be evacuated at Guam. A captain knows his vessel. He has suggested keeping a skeleton crew of about 10% of the crew to manage the nuclear reactors, because, well, they've got those, and otherwise try to disinfect the massive aircraft carrier. And as of yesterday, the Secretary of Defense sent him a Laurel and Hardy handshake and a great big fuck you. More or less telling every one of those 4,000 men and women aboard that ship, hey, you didn't want it to happen to you. Shouldn't have joined up. What? Did you think we're fucking Republicans. Did you think we actually gave a tinker's damn about you? You're expendable. The Republicans only care about the military when they can wave a member of its bloody shirt to whip the country into some sort of bloodthirsty frenzy to go and slaughter the shit out of some brown people. And so presumably, what is already a bad situation aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt will get worse. Here's another little thought experiment. Now, Theodore Roosevelt was a Republican. Granted. But he at least had a connection to the Navy. You know, it was called the Great White Fleet that circumnavigated the globe when he was president. A young William F. Bull Halsey would sail with that fleet. It was a projection of American imperial might and a matter of us flexing our imperialist muscles, and not just to scare the unwhite peoples of the planet and put them on notice, but to do the same with the Navy particular of His Majesty, the King of Merry Oldie Angoland. But here's the little thought experiment. If it was the USS Ronald Reagan, which is also a nuclear aircraft carrier, massive, that was quickly descending into the status of a plague ship, do you reckon that every Republican in Congress would be hopping up and down, mad as an old wet hen, running around like a chicken with its head cut off, demanding that something, something, something must be done for the Reagan? Yeah, or not. You might recall that during the Fukushima disaster, it was the Reagan that was sailed into Tokyo Bay and which was allowed to be pelted in radiation. I remember that. You can look it up. But Republicans being Republicans, I bet the reaction would be different if it was young men and women getting sick and facing viral death aboard a ship named for that greasy-headed old B-movie actor, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, who stands as the apotheotic god of the Republican Party. Feel free to wonder if apotheotic is a real word. I'm guessing it is. Oh, that's who it was. Ron in Raleigh says, talk about the solid South. How could you possibly forget Asa Hutchinson of Askansas? Askansas. Yeah, Arkansas. Believe you me, it's taken me a long time to try. It's taken a lot of work trying to forget Asa Hutchinson. A lot of work, Ron. Thanks for the reminder. Darlene in Connecticut says, so I'm totally freaked. My mom's convalescent home has 4 confirmed COVID-19 cases in a separate wing. They have not ruled out relocating her. She is in her 80s, and I am worried I may never see her again. Finally, the CNAs tending to her are now wearing surgical masks based on what my mother described. Finally, they only began doing that today. My little town, which borders the small city where my mom is in convalescence, just logged its first confirmed case. I was told by town officials that we are at capacity and that all the wealthy New Yorkers' weekend homes at the exclusive lake community I've mentioned before, along with all available rentals in my town, are occupied. They are fleeing to my town from New York. Our volunteer fire department and the EMS are worried, as they risk getting exposed on emergency calls. And it is well known in our town that the New Yorkers are not self-quarantining at the lake, as requested by Governor Lamont. Our first selectman has sent an additional request to the lake community to tell them to self-quarantine and has asked the governor to be more forceful in his request, i.e. to probably issue an executive order requiring that New Yorkers self-quarantine. I'll admit, says Darlene, I'm a typical Connecticut resident who views New Yorkers in our state as behaving obnoxiously. They drive like they own our roads, although they are far better drivers than Massachusetts drivers. Well, let's go ahead and get that squabble started. And only one other set of drivers are even far worse than New Yorkers, and that is New Jersey drivers. I'll take a New York driver over a New Jersey driver any day. Of course, it goes without saying that Connecticut drivers are absolutely the bestest drivers in the country. LOL. I will add editorially, that no matter what you say about New York drivers, New Jersey drivers, or Massachusetts drivers, you ain't lived till you've met an Ohio driver. Sorry, Ohio friends. It just is what it is. Occasionally on something on a highway like Interstate 79 that runs north from Charleston to Morgantown, there are a couple of places where you've got one of those forever views, or at least 2 or 3 or 4 miles. And I think I've referenced this before on the program. You can get to the top of a hill, and way up in the distance, there's a car in the left lane. And you know that it's going under the speed limit because you're doing the speed limit, and you're gaining on it. Well, long before you can tell make or model of the automobile, you know your own name, that by the time you catch that car, and catch it you will, it will be doing 45 miles an hour in the left lane, and it will have an Ohio license plate. It's just a fact. Anyway, back to Darlene's note. That said, there are New Yorkers I know of whom I am quite fond. I want them to know that our town is a safe harbor for them if they're respectful to everyone else's well-being and health and follow our governor's admonitions. But there are other Connecticut residents who are not so accommodating. I was sent this op-ed by a friend and am shocked that they published it. Mind you, I'm always aware of, know by acquaintance who the author is. Or I'm aware of, know by acquaintance who the author is. He lives in the extremely wealthy town next door that you have mentioned recently on your program. I was told years ago that he studied Latin and is a millionaire for having developed pocket-sized word puzzle books. He sold his business for millions and so retired early. There's a great deal I take issue with in the op-ed from this knower of words. This should not be considered free speech, but the author is a Republican, and the paper that published it is a conservative rag as well. I've attached as a screenshot and in PDF in case you have trouble downloading one or the other. Please don't reveal his name. I won't. But she says, I'm beginning to think he's not all that brilliant. Since when was my neck of the woods ever antiseptic, LOL? The COVID is the great equalizer, isn't it? You've now got the wealthy railing against other wealthy individuals. Interesting. Well, you know, there's that old saying out there, eat the rich. There's no rule out there that says it can't be cannibalistic. Me, I find them a bit stringy and gamey when you get right down to it. Well, now. Okay, I can tell by just the opening sentence that this is going to be high quality. And I won't give away any names. The dastardly pestilential horde of the evil empire state has breached the perimeter of our bucolic antiseptic hills and is commandeering our property and terrorizing our citizenry. The noxious New Yorkers have wreaked... Am I sure I didn't write this? The noxious New Yorkers have wreaked havoc as only they can, so the time has come, the hour is right for us passive-aggressive... Really? Really, hillbillies? Really? You knew what that word was going to do to me, didn't you, Darlene? Hillbillies, to let slip the dogs of war and give the unwelcome intruders what for. So let's call out our militia to strategically marshal its legendary forces to rid us of the infectious invaders. True, they're licensed by the state to do little more than entertain, but in these trying times, it's essential that its doughty troops and awesome ordnance be deployed to protect and preserve our robust but tranquil community. Essential is the key word, after all. And one last thing. Remember, this is being written by a right-wing Republican. And one last thing, lest I be accused of doing a Biden, the dogs of war bit is borrowed from Shakespeare. And it's not the first time I've used it, so apologies to Will Shakespeare and Mark Antony. Dot, dot, dot. Well, he fucked up his ellipsis, and you don't capitalize the L in lest after you've used a colon. Some practitioner of the art of word knowing he is, Darlene. But let's remember, just to put things in historical perspective, this is nothing new. This kind of rhetoric. When we talk about secession in American history, we tend to think of places like South Carolina, Stan, and General Pierre Gustave Touton Beauregard, and those young lads sitting there on the landward side and lobbing shells at Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. That is not where the idea of secession first was mentioned. Nope. The first rumblings of secession came out of the Granite State. Yep. New Hampshire was pissed off and decided that they might just very well want out of this whole newfangled United States thingy. It, however, was put to rest in fairly short order. There was no gunplay. But I do understand some of the feelings that Darlene is giving voice to. Because, you know, we've here in West Virginia, we shut down the essential businesses, or non-essential businesses, I should say. No bars, no restaurants. We got nothing left here but fast food and grocery stores, gas stations, a couple of gun stores. I mean, come on, it's West Virginia. Coal mines, maybe more on that in a little bit. And make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice still has not, to the best of my knowledge, while the campgrounds and restrooms and so forth have been shut down inside the New River Gorge National River National Park, the mom-and-pop campgrounds that are supposed to be closed ain't. And neither are the Airbnbs. And here in my little county that has no reported cases, tempers are beginning to run a little hot about people from plates that don't say wild wonderful on it deciding that they want to be here during the plague. And here, by the way, here's a literary reference. Some of the more literary types in this community will be familiar with the name of the author Shirley Jackson. Before there was ever a Stephen King, and she didn't write nearly as graphically as he did, but she wrote brilliantly, there was Shirley Jackson telling horror tales of life in New England. Her most well-known piece is probably The Lottery. Now, it's set in a nondescript place, but you get the idea that it probably New England. And the, you know, there's the line from the old man as the crowd gathers in the town square, as it has every year. There's always been a lottery, the old man declares. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon, he adds. And it turns into a tale of genuinely macabre horror. Well, not quite as well known as that is a story, and it was adapted into a one-act play called The Summer People. And it's about tourists, or some tourists, a couple, a tourist couple, who have come to the same little town and rented the same little cabin year in and year out, spend the summer there, and then go away like tourists are supposed to. But then, and this is the time that this, in which the story takes place, one year they decide that they just love it so much there that they're going to go ahead and stay the winter too. And that's when it turns into a horror story. I'm sure you can find it if you look it up. The Summer People. How do I know about it? Because that one act play was entered in the high school drama competition many and many a year ago. I think I was in ninth grade, and of course I wasn't cast in it, but I still have friends who played in it, and I went all the way to the state championships. And it had a creepy as fuck ending. Didn't work out well for the Summer People. No. I think that all of that speaks to what Darlene was talking about. And I don't care how many times he writes it, Darlene. You can tell him that you know a real hillbilly who took extreme umbrage at his use of the term. And that no matter how many times y'all say it, y'all ain't. Nope. We have inquiries about the driver in the left lane. Lee in New York asks, does that driver have the left turn signal on? That is not beyond the realm of possibility. Most times it's just a matter of just being out cruising around, you know, up and down the interstate. A couple more notes. Barbara says, they better head for Cuba if the people on the cruise ship want help. They damn sure won't get it from Florida and any of the other red states located in the Gulf. Nope. Might be actually a pretty decent suggestion. Elbert in Rhode Island says, Bob, I actually enjoy not riding a motorcycle in Texas. Drivers there will tailgate a motorcyclist. Up here in Rhode Island, drivers give you at least a full car length on a road. I love the construction there. I actually enjoy not riding a motorcycle in Texas. You know, there's a lot of things you can enjoy not doing in Texas. Most anything at all right now, given the fact that Governor Ranger Greg Abbott has decided he wants to see a couple of 100,000 Texans die over the course of the next month or so, because he won't issue a statewide stay-at-home order. David in South Carolina, Stan, apparently pandemic, not the main topic for the pandemic task force. Charlie Pierce asking earlier via Twitter, what happened to the pandemic? It was in all the papers. But no, Sparky's taken one for the team, and he says the defense secretary's there. They have charts which say enhanced counter-narcotics operations using ships, planes, and the Coast Guard. You know, my aching back. Oh, well, that's true, too. Brother Deacon Asa adds, call me a pessimist, but seeing as how old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, said, to hell with those Marines. They can get fucked. We need our flag on the ground in Lebanon My guess is his fellow pig fuckers wouldn't give a rat's turd about the sailors aboard the USS 666 either. You know, they probably should have. She should probably be CVN 666. Ronald Wilson, USS Ronald Wilson Reagan. Yes, I know, says Darlene. Yes, I knew, said Darlene. The hillbilly's reference was going to flip your lid as it did mine. The author really doesn't know hillbilly from a hole in his golf course. He exemplifies what the greatest and smartest first lady we've ever had, with Eleanor Roosevelt being a close second, pointed out in her book Becoming. And I'm paraphrasing, that being rich doesn't necessarily mean you're all that intelligent. Now, in fact, I'll see Mrs. Obama's and raise her. Being rich is as often as not an indication that you're not very smart at all. You just know how to grub money. Oh, and there's a link to the Summer People. Thank you, Ralphs. And Flavio, Flavio is such a literati in our little community. Flavio says, I read the lottery in high school. Creepy as fuck. Yes, it is. And of course, when you've got a good literature teacher, and they can walk you through how it's all wrapped up in some pretty ancient human behaviors, you get even more respect for Shirley Jackson. Well, as much as he doesn't like prayer meeting Wednesday, Sparky has had all he can stand at the midweek shit show. I had to turn it off, he says. I had to turn it off. I understand. I so thoroughly understand. Yeah, I don't know how the drug war found its way into the pandemic schedule. Amy Siskind on Twitter reporting that U.S. Attorney Bill Pepe the Frog Barr said at the coronavirus briefing, one of our priorities must remain destroying the Mexican cartels. Ms. Siskind pointed out, no social distancing, shiny coins thrown to distract and appear in control. Tune out this propaganda. All the media should boycott these daily charades. It almost seemed like CNN and MSNBC were figuring it out when they didn't even carry Nitwit Nero blathering along, and instead only cut away when somebody with some actual knowledge decided to talk. I caught an interview, I think it was Katie Turr, interviewing Dr. Fauci, and she asked him straight up, listen, these states that don't have mandatory stay-at-home orders, Dr. Fauci, should they initiate one? Somebody had apparently had a word with Dr. Fauci because he said, well, what they need to do is they need to follow the guidance that's been provided. Now, the guidance that's been provided suggests, but does not make mandatory, a statewide, state-ordered shutdown. She asked him repeatedly. She practically begged him, please tell these states they've got to shut down if they don't want to see dead people piling up like cordwood. And yet, because of something that had happened, I don't know if he woke up that morning with a horse's head in his bed or what, he would not say that states like South Dakota and Oklahoma stand, which still aren't even asking people to voluntarily do dick, should institute a statewide shutdown. Or that Texas should, which has, like, voluntary whatever. And your voluntary states are Texas and Arkansas and Missouri stand and Mississippi stand and Alabama and Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, a few others, but it's mainly the Confederacy. Wouldn't say that they absolutely should do it. curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. Oh, even though so much of it is about the disease, there is just so much, there's so much content this evening. Well, where did the time go? I've almost filibobstered halfway through the program. And just a gentle reminder, we have Shirley's Memorial Challenge on the table this evening. If we raise the evening's $200, it gets doubled. Thanks to Laborman and Ralph's and an anonymous member of the community. We are at zero. And that is, it's not an encouraging way to begin the new month. Oh, by the way, today, just because there is more going on, and made obvious by the silly PR of this evening's shit show, we're going to get them Mexican cartels. We're going to get it. Well, COVID Caligula today decided that maybe he could get a little bump out of threatening Iran some more. No, really. He got into Twitter today and said, upon information and belief, Iran or its proxies are planning a sneak attack on U.S. troops and or assets in Iraq. If this happens, Iran will pay a very heavy price indeed. Curious usage there. Upon information and belief. That's one of those legal terms of art. That's one of those things where you think that you're reading one thing and you're actually not. You're reading something that means something entirely different in legalese. For instance, there's a legal document out there called a verified pleading. And in many jurisdictions, the verification reads, the undersigned, having read the foregoing, asserts that the allegations contained therein are true and correct to the best of her knowledge, except where stated to be upon information and belief, in which case she believes them to be true. So when you're going through a legal document or a legal pleading or motion practice, you know, whatever, and you see that phrase upon information and belief, what you know immediately is that the person saying it is not claiming to have factual knowledge of the truth of the matter asserted. It is the legal equivalent of saying, and this part is gossip, or, and I'm speculating about this part, or I'm guessing about this part. But the bottom line is, this part isn't factual. Or put even more succinctly, this part, I got no fucking way to prove whatsoever. And so there it was in a tweet today, and I went, son of a gun, he's telling us right up front, I'm lying again.
Upon information and belief.
He's desperate to find something to get the American people scared of, besides this godforsaken virus. Because if you're taking it at all seriously, you're scared as shit of that. because it goes back to what I was talking about with Dr. McCauley last night. What you can't see can kill you. I mean, at least them Iranians, you know, they're out there yelling Aloha snack bar and all that shit. And you know they want to, you know they hate America. I mean, they're hollering death to America all the time. So if we're going to be scared of somebody, let's be scared of somebody that we can bomb a snot out of, and maybe the snot's going to have some coronavirus in it. And then there's the strategery of it. If you know somebody's planning a sneak attack, do you really broadcast it out on Twitter?
I caught him. That's why I put it on Twitter. I wanted him to know that we caught him.
But then it's hard to get the actual bust. Yeah. True happiness. James in Illinois says, in my experience, back around 1983, it was Texas in the rearview mirror. All right, I'm going to get hate mail from the Texas contingent. By the way, did you know that Chicago to San Francisco was 4,000 miles? No. It is if you go by way of Houston. That's what the geographers refer to as the Great Circle Route, isn't it, James? Sneak attack. James adds, doesn't that apply across the board? Iran, France, Paraguay? Well, yeah, I kind of, yes. And I mentioned the USS Teddy Roosevelt earlier. Shorty in L.A. says, Shorty parts unknown. Oh, my God, Chief of the Navy slapped Mike Esper. Esper is pissed. The Admiral said we moved 1,000. Mike Esper was too late. The Navy has spoken. The Chief of the Navy kept his word. Well, close to. The head of the Navy just said we moved over 1,000, and that number will be increasing to 2,700 by Friday. So was that, Shorty, was that the Secretary of the Navy? About Anthony Fauci from Steve Van Zandt, you know, of the E Street Band and Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul and the Sopranos. Stevie Van Zandt says, I'm sorry, but I'm sick of these motherfuckers who are supposed to be heroes pussying around with their fucking answers. Dr. Fauci was asked, should every state be quarantining? Why can't this fuck say yes? He goes into some bullshit about the guidelines. Say yes, motherfucker. Yes. Note coming from Darlene in Connecticut. Oh, shit. That's the subject line. I just had a horrendous thought. What if the COVID-19 catastrophe is used to delay the 2020 elections long enough to exceed the 5-year statute of limitations on indicting Trump? To actualize what Representative Quigley questioned Director Mueller about almost a year ago in July, and to which the latter expressed a curious lack of knowledge and contemplation about, for a man who seems contemplative and with a dream team of the best prosecutors in the country at his freaking disposal. Just saying. Steve from New York and Billable Rick, please weigh in. By the way, were you frontiered? No, I've not been frontiered. I thought you said we were doing a front porch with Steve from Georgia Stan as the moderator, but I'm not seeing a link on the webpage. Maybe it was an older program that leaked in. No, I did. No, I just said Steve was on the. I just said Steve was moderating in the chat room. I didn't. If I said front porch, I apologize. No, wasn't planning on doing a front porch, but not the worst idea I've ever heard. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Neil, very kindly. Neil just got us started. Actually, Tom got us started earlier. And so of the $200 challenge that's on the table, we now have $165 to go. Thank you. Yeah, I miscalculated when I said it was a zero. Thank you for alerting me. Yeah, that's no, you got it right, Tom. He said, "Did I sign up wrong or something?" No, you got it. You got it perfectly. So that, yeah, between you and Neil, we are at 165 to go to finish Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Signed, Tom, sheltering in place in sunny San Rafael. Oh, and this is just a silly thing, but something, and I'm going, and by the way, phone lines are open if you want to jump in to address Darlene's question or anything else that might be on your mind. Bob Kincaid Horn, area code 304-574-8178. Toll-free, 844-843-4676, assuming that the stress line works. I need to probably reboot that in a very big way, 844-THE-HORN. But the phone tells me that we are actually connected to the gizmo box. Yeah, other things that are open, Arnold reminds us, Tractor Supply, Home Depot, Walmart, Lowe's, Rural King. Yeah. I was kind of grateful that Rural King was open because our little furry friends also have to eat. And apparently Walmart had been wiped out of kibble the other day, so I had to go to Rural King, and mercifully it was there. As to upon information and belief, Steve in New York says, I'm going to disagree with your characterization. I think he expressed a desire to take people's minds off the pandemic hoax. Someone told him to say upon information and belief in order to give him plausible deniability if he attacks, and it was, in fact, baseless. Well, that actually makes more sense. But I think I think that one encapsulates the other. It was still a tell that he didn't have shit to base it on. But that he would very much like to wag the dog, as the saying goes, that term having been coined back during the Clinton 90s for any time that President William Jefferson Clinton decided to use the United States military for, you know, as commander-in-chief. The people like the oxymoron Rush Limbaugh would scream, "My friends, it is clear that Billy Blythe is wagging the dog, trying to take our attention off the devious plot of Charlie Tree at that Chinese restaurant in Little Rock, Arkansas." Yeah, God. Mm-hmm. You're getting too good at this, David, in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line, Migrant caravans are approaching our border again right during a political campaign, and we have a pandemic. It reminds me of what the Third Stage Guild Navigator says to the Padishah Emperor of the known universe, Shaddam the Fourth. "You are transparent to me. I see through you." Angelo with a note. In more serious news, federal judge of the Southern District of New York, Kevin Duffy, passed away today due to COVID-19. I'll be damned I hadn't seen that. His death, along with the earlier death of Judge Deborah Batts in January, makes for two vacancies on the district court for Nitwit Nero and Turtle McConnell to have a chance to fill from the Federalist Society list, as if we don't have enough things to worry about in New York City. So to all you Bernie Bros and Never Bidens, fuck off! This election is too important. Yeah, wouldn't it have been nice not to have had to go through the fucking Kavanaugh hearings? Wouldn't it have been nice not to have had to go through the Ann's boy Neil hearings? It just strikes me that, yeah, that would have been nice. Okay, so it looks like the stress line might be working. Are you there? No? Well, I answered, but they bailed. Oh, well, you'll have that. So, we are past the halfway point of the program this evening. And it is prayer meeting Wednesday. Oh, let's take a quick peep over at Twitter, see if anybody's got anything to say over there. Again, thanks to our pal Renee on Twitter for tweeting the program link every evening. That is much obliged. Makes it easy for folks to find the program and participate. And again, this is one of those now more than ever kind of moments, because when I came up with the idea of conversation radio, I really hoped it would mean something. And now that we're all having to sit around in our own houses and sort of eat our own livers, it's good to have an outlet for 3 or so hours a day where, if you want to get in on the conversation, you absolutely can. All right, let's try the stress line again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's me, Reggie from the KDQ.
Well, hey, Reggie, how are you? Go ahead, man. Go, Reggie. Reggie.
Hey, Bob, this is Reggie from the Cated Village. What? It's going to be, like they say, it's going to get worse before it gets better, you know, the eye before the storm, I guess. And we try to have hope, you know. We listen to the scientists, but we give them the benefit of the doubt. What say you, Bob? Because we listen to guys like Dr. Fauci and all of them. We're doing the very best that they can to keep us abreast on daily COVID-19 news events.
Well, I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can say that anymore.
What do you think about that, Bob?
I don't know if you can say that anymore, Reggie. After today's shit show that turned out to be about Mexican drug cartels instead of being about the pandemic. I mean, what the hell?
What do you think about it, Bob?
Can you not hear me? Well, that's the darndest thing. Well, that just, maybe I need to, there we go. Okay, I probably needed it. Okay, I've solved the problem. At least I think I have. Next caller to the stress line, we'll find out. My natural skepticism, I've tried to back burner it in hopes that, I might be right, and that Burks and Fauci in particular were trying to work within an otherwise intolerable situation so as to save lives. But that business with Katie Turr, you really, really gave me pause. Because it wasn't a hard question. The answer is yes. There's only one right answer. Yes. Yes.
every state should be putting a stay-at-home order in place. It's not that hard. And yet he found it to be more difficult than the rest of us. Dr. Fauci is finally speaking, so let's check in with him.
Get that data. It'll take a few months to get the data to feel confident to go to the phase two. And then a few months from now, we'll be in phase two. And I think we're right on target to the year to a year and a half.
And if you don't mind me asking, you and Dr. Birx, have either of you received threats of any kind, or have you been given a security detail, given that you've been out here every day on camera speaking?
Well, I mean, anything that has to do with security detail, I'd have to have you refer that question to the Inspector General of HHS rather than my answer that.
Can I follow up on testing?
He has a neat security. Everybody loves him.
Can I follow up on testing, Dr. Fauci?
In big trouble if they ever attack. You know, he was a great basketball player. Did anybody know that? He was a little on the short side for the NBA, but he was talented. He won a game. I read the story. He won a game that was unwinnable against a great team. And his whole team said, we can't beat this team. And he went in and they won the game, right? That was a couple of years ago. But
a few years ago.
The head never changes. The attitude never changes.
He's just so happy.
I know he loves being up behind the podium.
He does.
Like pulling teeth, like going to the dentist. I don't want to hit you with everything that's coming along, but a lot of people who are watching television today heard from a researcher named Dr. Jacob Granville, who's come up with a potential antibody therapy that he has given to USAMRID. Just wanted to know if you know anything about this, what you might be able to tell people at home about it who have seen it.
You know, John, I don't know specifically this individual, what they're doing, but I can tell you there's a lot of activity that is centered around a passive transfer of antibodies in the form of convalescent plasma, one. The number is to get immune globulin that you precipitate out of the plasma, and another is monoclonal antibody. It's based on the same principle of if you have a protective antibody, passive transfer of that could provide not only protection prophylactically, but also treatment. This is an old concept. In fact, immunology was born decades and decades and decades ago with the concept of giving passive transfer of serum to an individual to protect them from an infection. So I wouldn't be surprised if he and a number of other people are pursuing this. It's the right thing to do.
Can I follow up on antibody testing, please, Dr. Fauci? At what point can we as a country expect there to be a widespread antibody testing so we know exactly what we're dealing with here, as well as other questions
such as
when can people who are deemed to be healthy donate blood, for example?
Okay, so when you talk about antibody testing, there are a couple of things that you want to do. You want to find out if someone has been infected and whether or not they're going to ultimately wind up being protected. Antibody testing right now is not the first thing on our priority. It's something that we need to do is testing to see if someone is infected. It is very important, ultimately, to be able to get a feel for what the penetrance of the infection was in society for a number of reasons. You get a better feel of what the impact had been, but also you get a better feel of what the herd immunity would be. So I can foresee in the future that when we get the facility, which we'll have for sure, I mean, ultimately you can get a test that could do this reasonably easy, and do the kind of what we call serosurveillance study. This is very analogous that Dr. Birx and I were talking about that a lot. And that is back in the day when she and I were both doing the HIV/AIDS issues, back when we first discovered the virus in 83 and we had an antibody test in 1985. We found out by serial surveillance representative in different populations that we were dealing with the tip of the iceberg when we saw individuals who were the ones who actually got infected. It gave us a really good feel for how many people were infected, how many are doing well, and how many are getting ill. I foresee that we'll have that same sort of information, which will be important information. But right now, that's not our immediate problem.
Not your priority, but can you give a sense of whether it will happen this year?
Let me just follow up with that, because I think
as I discussed before, we had great, I just want to thank all the epidemiologists and scientists out there who worked with us over the last 4 weeks on models. They really, many came forward and really supported us.
Meanwhile, Nitwit Nero's off to the side. Models? There are models? What? Nobody told me about models. I love models. That's why I went to those parties with Jeffrey Epstein, the models.
Universities, some of them, basic science. All of them have received NIH grants for HIV or other development of assays in the past. I've talked to a lot of them over the last few days to really ask them to develop these simple ELISA tests that could be used rapidly in their healthcare centers. Because immediately, with a it's easy to do. We've all developed ELISAs. So in a day or two after development, they could screen their entire hospital. I think that would be very reassuring to the healthcare workers who have been on the front line. We worry about them every day. And so I've really called on every university and every state to develop ELISAs. You can buy the antigens and the controls online and really work to test entire healthcare communities in your states and support them that way. At the same time, we worked in sub-Saharan Africa in what we call dry blood spots. So we're looking at, could you use that in a community while we work on the point of care test, where you just dot blood onto this paper, and then that can go into the lab and be analyzed. That would allow us to look in nursing homes and other long-term care facilities immediately. And then finally, we've reached out to the developers of the rapid test, the ones who developed it for malaria, the ones that developed them for HIV. It's exactly the same concept and process, to ask them to rapidly develop these tests, because I think we owe it to the frontline healthcare providers not only to provide them RNA tests, but many of them have been on the front line now for 4 weeks, may have become exposed. We now know they're asymptomatic. And I think really being able to tell them the peace of mind that would come from knowing you already were infected, you have antibody, you're safe from reinfection 99.9% of the time. And so this, I think, would be very reassuring to our frontline healthcare workers. And our universities can do that by Friday. So I'm putting that challenge out to them to really work on that and do that. That's what we did in the early days. We had ELISAs up and running within days of having the antigen. And so this is what's really possible. So we're not waiting. We're
ELISAs?
Asking for help now.
So potentially this could happen soon, even within this month, if people take up that challenge?
It could happen soon, within this month, if the universities help us. Absolutely.
Mr. President, I'm Florida. Governor DeSantis says that he spoke with you before issuing his stay at home order.
He did. Spoke to me this morning.
I'll be damned.
He has some loopholes in that.
I don't know. He spoke to me this morning. He knows what
he's saying. For example,
very good
large
judge.
Religious groups can meet together. Now, that doesn't really
agree. Who can?
Religious groups, like
I
churches can meet.
But he did speak to me this morning. We talked about it. Please.
Full mitigation, sir. Does that go against your model? Because that's not full mitigation.
I don't know. I'd have to look at what he did.
Back to the healthcare workers on the front lines, following up with Dr. Birx as well. Hazard pay. You have said you have wanted that for the healthcare workers.
Wow, that wasn't helpful, was it?
Lines. I know Secretary Mnuchin has mentioned something about that possibly in the fourth level of the stimulus package.
I like it.
But can you make it happen now? Do we have to wait for a fourth stimulus?
Well, I think it's something we're discussing in terms of bonus or bonus pay. It doesn't have to be called hazard pay. It could be called, I watched those people go into hospitals that I know I talked about.
Yeah, he's an idiot. So let's just take a moment here while he's saying things that he doesn't understand. There was a tell there. He really is, and this is 2 days running, we've had proof of it. Yesterday, the day before, maybe 2 out of 3 days. It was either yesterday or the day before, he was tweeting about how I saw Nancy Pelosi on Morning Joe, and I don't really know what she's talking about, except she's trying to hurt America some more. Huh? And then Scarborough gets on this morning and does the clip I played earlier. And you'll recall he addressed himself directly to Donald Trump as if he knew that Trump was watching. And he was. And DeSantis was watching. And there was a phone call.
this poor intellectual, no, not poor, this intellectually damaged freak is spending all his time, I mean, they told us, he's spending all his time watching TV and just confessed to it. And there's a loophole in the monkey up DeClantis stay-at-home order that lets Rodney Howard Brown go and sit and convene his church and make sure that the virus spreads anyway while everybody else is sacrificing. Fuck you, monkey up DeClantis, with a white, and I do mean white, hot poker. Fuck you. The single greatest threat to having spikes instead of flattening the curve in this country today is churches. Because they engage in magical thinking. They believe in angels and demons and snakes that talk. They believe that gods come down and make ficky fick in a invisibly in a 13-year-old little girl and rape them and make the little girl have their baby boy, which the god then murders to say, oh, never mind. But they believe all this crazy shit, and they don't have any use for science. And it got so bad that the jackass in Baton Rouge got hit with not two, but six counts of criminal conduct in Louisiana stand, with people actually going out to protest his stupid, filthy church. With signs that say, for instance, God don't like stupid. Because this particular gospel sharp was holding a service as recently as last night. The Life Tabernacle Church in Central Louisiana. Packed with hundreds of worshipers, spewing those little droplets and aerosolizing viral particles all over the building. One man outside the church had a bullhorn and had said, "Come out, Tony. Come tell us why you're endangering people's lives." Nonetheless, Tony, the gospel sharp, said, "We are needy people. Our souls are lost. We need help, help. And the church is the salvation center of the soul, the sanctuary where we help come together and help meet." The goddess of irony is at work, however, because, you know, I just said they believe in magical thinking, and the guy's last name is literally Spell. It was a little bit earlier when he said, "The virus, we believe, is politically motivated. We hold our religious rights dear, and we are going to assemble no matter what someone says." Put him under the jail. Jesus. Oh, look, it's Mike Pencilneck Geek.
Engagement, and frankly, because of that patriotic and compassionate spirit that's being reflected, we've already seen two of the largest insurance companies in the country announce that they're going to be providing full coverage, free of charge, for coronavirus treatment. I fully expect, I think as the president does too, that we'll see more of that for people that have insurance. We'll continue to provide flexibility for Medicaid for people that don't have insurance. We'll make sure that Medicare has the flexibility to meet this moment. For seniors, when we remember that seniors with underlying health conditions are the most vulnerable to serious outcomes from the coronavirus, but we'll get through this using the full weight of the federal government and the full strength of the American economy.
John, I think it's a very fair question, though, and it's something we're really going to look at because it doesn't seem fair. If you have it, you have a big advantage, and at a certain income level, you do. I think it's one of the greatest answers I've ever heard. Because Mike was able to speak for 5 minutes and not even touch your question.
No,
I said that's what you call a great profession.
Wow.
But let me just tell you, you really are. It's really a fair question, and it's something we're looking at.
Well, I think just in terms of a fair question or not, I always endeavor to ask fair questions. But this is a huge worry for people in this country who are in that donut hole. They don't have commercial insurance. They don't qualify for Medicaid. Right. What do they do?
And it's a pretty big group. We're looking at it. I mean,
it's 27.5 million, dickhead.
The donut hole, and it's still there.
Yeah, we are. I haven't been up there yet, though. You know, the other people have been talking about it.
Donuts.
No, I mean, and they haven't spoken.
This was 20 years ago we were talking about it.
But they're talking about it. They're talking about it. I know, but they're talking about it in the 2020 election, too, and nobody's gotten to it. Nobody's talked about it at all.
Mr. President?
I think we will. Yeah, I think we're going to get to it. I think we're going to get to it. I don't think the other group will get to it. They haven't even spoken about it. And it's a big group of people.
He's lying, Frick.
Are you committing that there's
no, I'm not committing, but it's something we're going to look at. I can't commit. I have to get approval from it. I have a thing called Congress. But it's something we're going to look at, and we have been looking at it.
You mentioned in this congressional bill, the sort of phase four, you would like to see something.
If there is a phase four, but we're certainly looking at certain things. We want to help restaurants, entertainment. We want to help, because it's jobs. Not that restaurants, it's jobs. Tremendous amounts of jobs. So we're looking at that. We're looking at infrastructure. I mean, we think of it. We will have spent $8 trillion. And, you know, it's way back. We're way pulled back. But we will have spent $8 trillion in the Middle East. And yet our roads are in bad shape. Our bridges, our tunnels, bad shape. And we're going to be the talk of the world again soon.
Oh, wait. Is it infrastructure week again?
We will have spent in the Middle East. And all we got out of it was death and cost. But all we got out of it was death. Millions of people. You have to look at the other side, too. Millions and millions of people killed. Our great soldiers, thousands killed, so many wounded, hurt. And yet when we want to go and fix a road someplace, we want to do what we want to do in our country. No, it's time that we spend money on our country. That's what we're going to do. It's time that we start spending on our roads and our bridges and our schools and all of the things that we're supposed to be spending on. And people are finally getting used to it. And you could look at all of what we've done in the Middle East, way back in so many different places.
Oh,
way back,
the ignoranti are swooning.
And I've gone to other countries that are very rich. I said, I'm sorry, you're going to have to reimburse us for our costs. They don't even want to know what I'm talking about. It takes them 20 minutes to figure it out because nobody's ever asked them to do that. And they're doing it. They're doing it, and they have no choice. They have to do it. So it's time that we start spending on the USA. Okay, please.
Mr. President, this is a question for the Vice President. On March 9th, you said 1 million tests had been delivered, and another 4 million would be delivered by the end of the week. That clearly did not happen. What happened with those projections? What went wrong?
Well, I think the test kits were delivered, according to HHS, but the difference is between receiving a test and the ability to rapidly produce a result to that test. And frankly, because of the public-private partnership that the president initiated now more than a month ago with our massive commercial laboratories across the country, our team was reported today that we're now doing more than 100,000 tests a day. More than 1.2 million tests have been performed. States have established drive-through sites all across the country. In fact, states have been so successful with the community-based and drive-through testing that we're working to transition over completely all of the federal work on drive-through testing and have the states completely manage that process.
So you're saying 4 million tests were delivered by the end of that week?
HHS was very busy from early in the year delivering test kits around the country. But the difference was, as the president said many times, we had an antiquated system where a state laboratory or CDC only had the capacity to process 40 to 60 tests a day. Now with the commercial labs, literally those labs are processing tens of thousands of tests every day. And so while we're continuing to distribute test kits around the country, now because of the partnership with companies like Roche and Quest and LabCorp, the American people are seeing the results of those tests
paid more product placements
than at any point in the past, and we expect that will continue to expand. But the exciting news this weekend about Abbott Laboratories having a 15-minute test approved is going to put us in a position, we believe, down the road to get to where Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx want us to be for many of the states that don't yet have significant outbreak. There's some 19 states where we don't have significant outbreak, but we want to be doing the kind of surveillance testing in those states that will allow us early on to identify people with the coronavirus, do what the experts call contact tracing, and ensure that in that state we don't have an outbreak of the coronavirus. So,
in many countries all over the world want to know whether or not they can use, especially our new test that was just developed by Abbott, which is almost instantaneous, which is going to be great. And remember this, we inherited bad tests. We really inherited bad tests. These are horrible tests. And
what? You didn't inherit shit. There weren't any coronavirus tests. The WHO paid for them to be developed and then gave them for free to poor countries, but said the U.S. had to pay for them, and President Cheapfuck there didn't want to do it because he couldn't figure out a way to work the grift.
On all domestic flights.
I am looking at hotspots. I am looking where flights are going into hotspots. Some of those flights I didn't like from the beginning, but closing up every single flight on every single airline, that's a very, very, very rough decision. But we are thinking about hot spots where you go from spot to spot, both hot. And we'll let you know fairly soon.
And what about rail travel?
A similar thing. We have trains going back and forth, and people don't think
we have no idea what we're doing.
Transportation business. It's a very big decision to do that. And we're pretty late in the process from the standpoint that this is starting. You're going to start seeing, I think, over the next couple of weeks, you're going to start to see us hit a top and start coming down. So we'll make those decisions. Those are very, very big decisions from the standpoint of the future of our country, in a way, in the future of our country. We have to get our country back. We have to start
from
moving
where?
Again. We have to start working
from who?
Again. They're doing tests on airlines, very strong tests for getting on, getting off. They're doing tests on trains, getting on, getting off. But when you start closing up entire transportation systems and then opening them up, that's a very tough thing to do.
There continues to be a lot of public confusion about the use of masks. What is the way?
The reuse. I love the sterilization of the masks. So, Ohio company, you can sterilize.
You want to use a sterilized mask there, Nitwit Nero?
You can sterilize that mask for up to 20 times. Think of that, up to 20 times. We're throwing them out. And they're very expensive masks. They're throwing them out. And I kept saying, one of the first questions I asked to Dr. Fauci,
this fucker has no concept of sterile technique whatsoever.
I didn't, you know, was it my thing exactly when we first heard about this? Nobody else knew it either. And now we have a company, and I guess a number of companies, one in Ohio, a great one, that makes equipment where you can sterilize a mask up to 20 times, which is fantastic.
Well,
okay.
What about you or me? What about the public? Should we be wearing masks out? We've heard lots of different recommendations.
I don't believe. Look,
say use a pacifier. Say use
like
a pacifier.
Some people don't like it because you're taking it away from the medical professional. Some people don't like it for other reasons. I don't see where it hurts. And it doesn't have to be a mask. It can be a scarf. Scarf is highly recommended by the professionals.
No, it isn't.
I don't see where it hurts. I think, if people wanted to do it.
Wait, is this yesterday? He was doing the scarf thing yesterday.
Tremendous amount of masks when you do that. We don't want to take them away from our medical professionals, but I certainly don't see it hurting. But what I do see people doing now is using scarves. And I think in a certain way, depending on the fabric, I think in a certain way a scarf is better. It's actually better.
Mr. President,
you know what's better than a scarf? A burqa.
I wanted to ask you about social distancing and how it applies to religious organizations.
Yeah.
Some churches, as you know, have continued to hold services, even though you have advised people that they need to practice social distancing. There was a pastor of a megachurch in Florida over the weekend who held services that were attended by several hundred people. So my question to you is, should pastors be holding services in the middle of this pandemic? And even if they do, should Americans be going to church?
Well, my biggest disappointment is that churches can't meet in a time of need. You know, this is really a great time for churches to be together, for people to get together on a Sunday or whenever, any day and meet. And yet, if you
he really
do that,
doesn't understand.
If you do it close, you're really giving this invisible enemy a very big advantage. So it's the biggest, I think the single biggest disappointment is you can't, one of the reasons I said, wouldn't it be great just to pick a date as, you know, I called it aspirational, an aspirational date would be Easter. I will tell you, it's very, very disappointing. But again, you get too close, and if somebody's sick, you're going to probably catch it. So you have to be very careful.
Did they cancel?
Yeah, just real quickly, Joe Biden's campaign came out with a statement today saying that Biden would be...
Did he write the statement, or did some PR person write it?
As far as I know, the campaign was wide awake, sir, and they sent out a statement that Joe Biden would be open to having a phone call with you to talk about the coronavirus pandemic.
That's okay, sure.
Would you take his call?
Oh, absolutely.
You would talk to him about it.
I'd love to speak to him, too. He should be able to.
Together.
I always found him to be a nice guy. I don't know him very well, frankly, but I think he's probably a nice guy. No, if he'd like to call, I'd absolutely take his call. Okay, you can tell him.
But you have talked about the failings of the Obama administration in leaving you with empty shelves and no plans.
Well, they have no ammunition.
All right, we've got a choice. I can either turn this off or start drinking. And I don't have any tequila. I don't have any anything. Fuck. He's utterly lost. Tracy just sent me this. It's breaking news. She said, what do you want to bet the fucker's a maggot? Dateline Los Angeles from the Associated Press. Reading straight from the copy. A train engineer intentionally drove a speeding locomotive off a track at the Port of Los Angeles because he was suspicious about the presence of a Navy hospital ship docked there amid the coronavirus crisis, federal prosecutors said Wednesday. The locomotive crashed through a series of barriers and fences before coming to rest more than 250 yards from the U.S. Navy hospital ship Mercy on Tuesday, according to the DOJ. Nobody was hurt. Eduardo Moreno, aged 44, was charged with one count of train wrecking. Interviewed by police after he deliberately drove the train off the rails. You only get this chance once. The whole world is watching. I had to. People don't know what's going on here. Now they will. Well, eventually some enterprising soul will check and see what one of these goons, one of these goblins, one of these freaks, one of these monstrosities of right-wing radio was saying about the hospital ship, and then we'll know where Mr. Moreno got his idea. Driving that train, high on cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Yeah, I know, flatter than fuck, flatter than piss on a plate, but it just came to mind. Hey, that was too much crazy to bear. God damn! Turn it off! Yells Ralphs. I know. And the same from Barbara. Oh, please, Bob, I can't take it no more. Somebody please throw a shoe at the big fat liar. Yeah, this is the part he lives for. You know, no more Fauci, no more real information, no more Dr. Birx, just him running his own campaign rally. Scarves. Yeah, they thought I was crazy, but I fooled them with the scarves. And what's that, Brother Deacon Asa?
They're doing very strong tests on the airlines.
Do the medical staff jam the swab up the passenger's nose really hard? What? Lee in New York says, Edward Everett wannabe. Never has there been a person speaking so unnecessarily long since the comparison between the speeches of Edward Everett and Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg. Everett said, I should be glad if I could flatter myself that I came as near to the central idea of the occasion in 2 hours as you did in 2 minutes. Unlike Edward Everett, Trump is unaware that he says nothing with many, many, many multiple words, the best words. OMG, 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 Art of Word Knowing Moment. Did Trump say
aspirational,
as in aspiration, defined as the action or process of drawing breath, which is the very thing the COVID, as I like to call it,
makes extremely difficult, being a respiratory virus, the goddess of irony.
Yeah, he's probably been listening to this program because you'll recall that I've used the phrase on a number of occasions that where democracy in the United States is concerned, our commitment to democracy has far more often been aspirational than inspirational. Meanwhile, Robert in Australia with a question, talking about how Nero wants to charge everybody for everything. Can we charge the USA for the spy base? We have a massive U.S. spy base here in Australia at Pine Gap. Can we start charging the USA rent for that? Yeah, I certainly think you should. But again, he's a deadbeat. You'll never get it out of him. Take a number. Who's this guy?
Health and safety and the well-being of those detainees. But again, that's a case-by-case basis. We're not going to make any blanket statement that we're going to release individuals of whole groups at a time. So it's really important.
This apparently has to do with the fact that that a U.S. federal prison in Louisiana has become a plague prison.
Capabilities,
a sort of devil's island
facility, or it's a contractor-owned facility, and so we're certainly doing that. We're doing that today. We've been doing that for the past several weeks.
Could you say how many have been released?
While you're up, could you talk about how tight that southern border is right now?
Absolutely. We have we continue to build.
Nope, not going to talk about the tight southern border or anything else being tight because fuck. I understand why Sparky had to turn it off. I do. I really do. I just got a note from Dave. There is a... I thought I said aspirational. I misquoted myself, according to Brother Deacon Asa. This is too much to know. There's a representative from Colorado, and he's a real turd, too. Has been for a very long time. Despises hillbillies, among other things, at least hillbillies who don't mind coal. What the World Health Organization really meant when they named the virus COVID-19. China, C, originated O, virus V, N, I, December, D, 19. No. Coronavirus ID 19. Coronavirus identifier 19. But never let something like a fact get in the way of a howling paranoid maggot. What the fuck, says James in Illinois.
A scarf is for one, fashion two, maybe the cold, but he thinks they're better. I have some dust masks in a dusty box here among my remodeling shit. I got curious. It's an N95, box of 20, less than a dollar each. Buy a million of them, I think the discount should be steep. Let's leave the scarves for sexy time. You know, with melanoma. Or Iwanka. Scarves. I turned back on your show, Lady B says. And the first voice I heard was Mike Pence, and I thought, this is my year in the lotto. They called my number. So if I'm going to get stoned, I may as well be stoned. Nah, just kidding. I'm only semi-stoned. Anyway, Trump doesn't get it. Jesus, he's the type of guy who would wonder why a slave who hasn't eaten in 3 days falls dead in the cotton fields. He needs to stop talking. His administration needs him to stop talking. Fuck the maggots. He's making shit up. He's not an authority, and he's not trustworthy, and he's the embodiment of delusion and senility. We would be doing the fucking world a favor if we just didn't let him talk anymore. Everyone in the media pretending this is a real and legitimate press conference should be fired and retrained to work in a factory. Fuck all of them. They're perpetuating this madness. This is the type of gaslighting that got us into this mess. Pretending he's important. Indulging in madness for the sake of ratings. Fuck 'em all. Love you, Bob. Play the experts. Drop Trump. He's pure hate. What a disgustingly evil man. Let's do the best we can for each other. Our leaders have hung us out to dry. Yeah. We're on our own. It's a fact. The governors of the responsible states will do the best that they can under unbearable circumstances. Ah, that explains it. The Trump shit show. Billable Rick says, I noticed you were playing excerpts of Trump's daily disinformation or un-news briefing for about 10 minutes after they stopped carrying it. Apparently CNN caught on to the fact that those un-news briefings are more for Trump's re-election campaign rather than to spread useful information, the exceptions being when Drs. Fauci or Birx are speaking. Yeah, what's weird, though, is it says President Trump joins the coronavirus task force to provide updates for Wednesday, April 1st. This is the feed, I'm sorry, from Fox, but Ralph sent it to me on the fly. And the time stamp on the thing is 7:16 p.m., which is maybe a little bit off, but then again, Fox's clock might be a little bit off. But that's enough of that. That's way more than enough of that. That may explain why I did scarves 2 days in a row. It was just, you know, yesterday. Aspirational, says Lee in New York. Trump has no aspiration. He focuses on respiration. I've heard his inhaling over and over again. MAGA, make America gasp again. I know. All this magnanimity, says Ron in Raleigh. So the insurance companies are out of the goodness of their hearts going to give free coverage. Universal coverage, according to Grandpa Joe, wouldn't make a difference in the pandemic. Fuck me, Ronan. Well, and a few minutes ago when Nitwit Nero was saying,
they're not, the other side, the other group isn't talking about it at all.
James in Illinois said, Bernie's talking about it. Medicare for all? I know. I mean, there are actually, no worries, Ralphs, no worry. There are lots of people. A vast chunk of the Democratic debate, such as it was, going as far back as when we had 20-plus candidates, was focused on health care and on the question of how do we get health care to everyone. 27.5 million uninsured Americans is a combination of people who would otherwise qualify but happen to have the misfortune of living in a vicious Confederate or other white-wing state And then the other group of people, which is people who are, even in states with the Medicaid expansion, too wealthy for Medicaid but too poor for one of the dodgy, dicey, specious Affordable Care Act insurance policies. That's true. Darlene says that deserved a cowbell about Trump's aspiration and inspiration. Lee in New York, bless you. And that's a bless you that's not like a sneeze bless you, because nobody wants anybody sneezing. Lee also noticed that line about,
we will get through this.
Lee says 4,773 people at last count will not get through this. And more than that will not get through this. So there is a wealth of news to report out there. A company in Texas has declared that they have 2 million N95 masks for sale. And the article from the Texas Tribune points out that that would run an average big corporation a dollar or less. A lot less, ordered a million at a time. And so enter industrial supplier Hatfield and Company of Texas to sell as many as 2 million masks to a major U.S. oil company last week. Hatfield and Company of Texas offered to sell the N95s to an oil company for $6.3 million for a minimum order of 1 million masks, with an option of buying 2 million for almost $13 million. The Texas Tribune has seen the sales documents and interviewed the parties to the transaction. And so that's a 600% markup. Maybe 1,200%. An industry salesperson familiar with Hatfield and Company's offer said, "You're not just marking it up like 50 cents. This is highway robbery. It's disgusting to me." And, of course, the Texas Tribune has the receipts. Asked by the Texas Tribune to explain itself, Hatfield and Company said they didn't mark up the product excessively or engage in price gouging. Their supplier set the terms and conditions for the sale. It's somebody else. And Brad Lindeman, who's in Beaumont, worked for Hatfield and Company. He gave a wee brief little interview to the Texas Tribune, and he said, "Now they set the price." And they had access to an undisclosed quantity N95 masks that are stored in warehouses all over Texas and other states. There's some in Houston, Dallas, Florida, and you know, I guess you'd say spread out all over. Inventories are constantly moving, so it's kind of hard to explain exactly what the quantities are. Doctors and nurses are getting sick and dying, but thanks to capitalism, somebody out there is going to make a right, smart, tasty little profit, because smart, tasty little profits are what it's all about. An outbreak of COVID-19 has killed 13 veterans at a veterans hospital in Holyoke, Massachusetts. There was no quarantine in place at the Holyoke Soldiers Home. No quarantine for patients experiencing symptoms consistent with COVID-19. And so the patients were allowed to continue hanging out in common areas. Then they didn't quarantine the friends of the sick veterans. Then they combined two separate units. Speaking to the Daily Hampshire Gazette, one certified nursing assistant said, "It's just complete chaos." The mayor of Holyoke, Alex Morse, said he knew that there was something bad brewing because his office would call the hospital and nobody would ever call back. Finally, on Sunday, Bennett Walsh, the hospital superintendent, called him back and told him that 8 veterans had died in the span of just days. Mike Mark Wright again. I mentioned Medicare for All a minute ago. According to the Morning Consult Politico tracking poll, as of right now, support for Medicare for All among all U.S. voters is at a 9-month high. 55% of U.S. voters support Medicare for All. That's up 9 points since February. Among Democratic voters, 75% support Medicare for All. 52% of independents do. And even 31% of Republicans. That's enough of a coalition to get it done, isn't it? The poll was conducted scant days ago between March the 27th and 29th. And the Morning Consult's Yusra Murad said, with the discussion of enacting a universal health care system in the United States intensifying, 43% of voters say they are more likely to support reforms to grant all Americans health insurance from the government because of the coronavirus outbreak. Notably, that support does not include the frontrunner in the Democratic presidential primary election, former Vice President Joe Biden. And Biden is getting it wrong. Two days ago on MSNBC, he said single-payer health care wouldn't solve the coronavirus pandemic. No, at this point, it cannot be medically solved. It has to run its course, and the curve has to be flattened. That's sociology, not medicine. But how we treat people who get the virus, that, Medicare for All can address. Sparky lets me know that Arnold Schwarzenegger just donated $1 million in masks and protective gear to hospital workers. Good for him. And because it is prayer meeting Wednesday, just a couple of things. It was, a day or so ago that the MyPillow freak got his moment in the sun at the shit show. And that was when he told all the Christians to go read their Bibles and, by extension, told all the Muslims, Jews, Sikhs, Hindus, Buddhists, animists, Jains,
and especially the atheists, to go right straight to hell. Well, guess what? No sooner than he got done with his star turn than he jumped back on social media and started promulgating a QAnon conspiracy. No, really. The MyPillow guy, and I would sleep with a rock for a pillow before I would use MyPillow. But they've got a discount code, and it contains the letter Q. And so the QAnon goofies have run out there and asked, "Didn't POTUS just bring the MyPillow CEO to the White House too? What a coincidence." Oh, for pity's sakes. But we're surprised. Why? Oh, and let's check in with Irvin Baxter. I've never heard of this gospel sharp before, but he showed up on the Bucket Puddin Hour with Jim Baker, and he's got a new angle on why God has sent this here plague to torment Merca. No, really. Really should think about it. No, I'm better off not.
I was thinking as I was putting all this together in my mind about the sin of fornication. And I thought about the term fornication. I did a little research. There are 7.5 million unmarried couples living together in the United States. This is not worldwide, just in America.
And just for the fun knowledge of the video, the imagery of it, he's doing all of this with a menorah in the background.
7.5 million couples. That means 15 million people that are living together unmarried. And that's increased.
Unmarried.
The last 10 years by 138%. Now, in addition to that, I hope this research is not correct, but I got it straight from the encyclopedia.
Oh, and Jim Baker wants you to know, because he's got a banner ad there while Irvin is talking, that for the low price of $35, you can get his pandemic bundle, Satan's End Time Plan Revealed DVD, and the Great Influenza book. Yeah. Yeah, Bucket Puddin not included.
It says that 5% of new brides in America now are virgins. That means 95% have already committed fornication.
Are whores.
Now, God says, all do not be deceived. God is not mocked. No fornicator, nor adulterer, nor effeminate, nor abuser of themselves with mankind, nor extortioner, nor drunkard. None of these shall inherit the kingdom of God. If we think we can just ignore God and live a sinful lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm surprised somebody there on the panel didn't say, "Hey, Irvin, ixnay on the ornicate fay." I mean, don't you know about the President of the United States? He ornicate fayed with every woman he ever married after the first one he married. And he was ornicate faying. Ornicating Faye before he married his first wife. I mean, when his wife was had just given birth to his latest little git, he was fornicating with Stormy Daniels and that other woman that nobody remembers because everybody remembers Stormy. Knock it off with the fornicating. You're saying the President of the United States won't inherit the kingdom of God. We're his friends. We're on the inside. Shut it, dumbass. Don't ruin the grift. Well, and here we go again. Two dead and dozens sickened in Washington State after a March 10th high school choir rehearsal. Billable Rick says, I just saw the above story on CNN. The choir rehearsal was held March 10th, just before Governor Jay Inslee issued a stay-home order. At the time, the choral director was aware of the risks of COVID-19 and emailed students to inform them not to show up for the rehearsal if they felt sick. However, because some asymptomatic students apparently attended the rehearsal, they unwittingly spread COVID-19 to their choral mates. As we now know, about 50% of people who test positive for COVID-19 are asymptomatic. Yeah, we'll call that the Rand Paul segment, and can serve as carriers of the disease. While singing is very important, I recently bought a home karaoke machine, Billable Rick says. It ain't worth risking your life. No. And see, that's just one little choral group. Imagine a megachurch. Or how about E.W. Jackson, who held services at the Called Church in Chesapeake, Virginia. There he said that Corona Caligula and Mike Pencilneck Geek haven't gotten the plague because they're being protected by God. But beyond that, he had another message. And that message was, fuck all of y'all. My gospel shop is more important than the health of the Commonwealth or of the nation.
Finally, we pray for the President of the United States. Lord, under vicious attack, under incessant, unrelenting, unmerciful attack on his character, on his competence, on his intelligence, on his decision-making, he continues to try to make...
And he does that all by himself.
...decisions that are in the best interests of our nation. He continues to express respect and honor for you and for our country. And Lord God, we pray for his strength. We pray for his wisdom. We pray for his protection. And Lord, I don't believe it's luck or happenstance that even though both he and the vice president have been exposed to the virus, neither of them has it.
That I know of.
And Lord, we know that's not mere luck. That's your protection on the leaders of this nation so that they can guide us through this difficult time without being hampered by this disease on a personal level.
Yeah. So that's why he doesn't have it, right? Because Jeebus. Jeebus, who didn't even know what a virus was. Wait, no, Jesus is God, and God made the virus. So, oh, dear, we're back in one of those conundrums again. Yeah, see, I knew the fornication clip would drive people batshit. Fornication, Steve from Georgia Stan says, seriously, did dude forget about the Jim Baker, Jessica Hahn scandal? Yeah, that had to be a little cringe-inducing. But no, E-Dub is going to keep on having his LARPing and smolicking and a hugging and a touching and a kissing and a handshaking sessions because Jeebus ain't going to let none of them get the COVID, or as it is being referred to in some sectors, the Rona.
Couldn't figure out how to shut these churches down and shut them up, but we finally got an excuse to do so. And that's why, folks, I'm telling you again, we're going to have our worship services. We are. We are. We've got enough room in our sanctuary for the numbers showing up to do social distancing. But I am not going to stop worshiping God. We're not going to stop gathering together, because I don't believe that any governor has the constitutional authority to tell me we can't.
Actually, A-Dub, which, as Ralphs points out, spells ew. Ill. Ill. Ralph says, oh, please, please let you, Jackson, have corona. Have a corona, E-Dub. See, the governor can shut down church services, because the First Amendment has some guardrails built in. I don't know how many times we've talked about the ancient legal example of you don't get to yell fire in a crowded theater, or you don't get to yell movie in a crowded firehouse, because it presents a priori, a threat to people's lives. Well, the same goes for diseases and people who think that they are immune to the disease because they're special, or because some magic Bronze Age deity is going to keep them from getting something that people in the Bronze Age didn't even understand existed, or thought were brought by demons, or ill humors, or miasma, or did I say demons? Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa says, E-Dub is getting dangerously close to tweaking the nose of the goddess here. Watch Trump and Pence fall like flies for a 100-degree fever in the next few days. Yeah, do not tweak the goddess of irony's pink little tomato nose. Do not do it. But yeah, fuck the Constitution, fuck the governor, fuck everybody but us. We're special, says the Christian.
The First Amendment gives us that right.
And the Supreme Court says that government also has a right to prior restraints on First Amendment activity in the name of public safety. And if this ain't that, what the fuck is?
You say, might there be some circumstance in which maybe we would relent? Yeah, there might be.
But not this one, because we're going to use this for our political advantage. Until we all get it and drop dead.
But this ain't it. Okay, this is not it. We got 1,000 cases in Virginia. Virginia's 8.5 million people. 8.5 million.
Well, whatever Larnin E-Dub got somewhere along the way, he didn't get no Larnin in, you know, exponential mathematics. Let's take a quick little peep at what Virginia is looking at. Hint, it is not pretty. According to COVID Act now, if they have strict compliance with 3 months of shelter in place, on about April the 29th, Virginia's hospitals will be overloaded. And they will remain overloaded until about June 8th. And in that best-case scenario, about 2,000 people will die. 3% of those 8.5 million people, anybody want to do the math on that, will be infected. That's strict compliance. However, what we're looking at here is poor compliance because of walking plague vectors like E.W. Jackson. And if Virginia has poor compliance, 129,000 deaths are estimated, with greater than 70% infection of those 8.5 million people in the Commonwealth of Virginia. That would be about that's north of 5.6 million people in the Commonwealth. And that's what E-Dub is looking for. That's what he's willing to bet his faith on and other people's lives on.
And you shut down 8.5 million people? Because we've got 1,000, and we know that most of those people are elderly. We know that most of those people are people who have been sick, who were sick already.
And that, you know, they're going to die, and then maybe we can take their shit.
And you're going to shut down 8.5 million people for 10 weeks?
Do you know how many old people I got in my congregation who I have talked into writing my church into their will?
No, I say it's wrong, and I would encourage every pastor across the Commonwealth of Virginia, I would encourage you, stand up for your First Amendment rights.
Kill your fellow Virginians. If I believed in the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, I would be inclined to say that guy is not a real worshiper over it. I'd say that he actually he worships a demon masquerading as the almighty creator of the universe. I would say that this guy is a follower of Antichrist. But I don't believe in any of that bilious horse shit. So I don't have to make excuses for E.W. Jackson. I can just point out that he is a mass murderer in the plotting stage of his crime. Yeah. All right, let's see if I got the problem with the stress line sorted out. Hey, welcome to the program.
I hope you got the problem with the stress line sorted out.
Lady B!
Hi.
So I got it fixed. Yay me.
Yeah. No, I heard E.W. Jackson, and I'm just, that brother, oh my God, I feel like Tracy. I want to cut a bitch if I have to listen to him. You know,
I'm not selling you short. Do you understand why I play this stuff? This isn't for shock value. This isn't so I can have fun making fun of somebody. This is like pointing out a guy with a rifle on a rooftop.
I think it's important to kind of keep our eye on people like him. But the problem is, you know how they say, I don't care what you say about me as long as you spell my name right? You know, any publicity is good publicity. And
yeah, but by the same token, Lady B, by the same token, nobody has a problem spelling John Wilkes Booth's name right either. Or Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah. Well, that's our fault as a society. I mean, we glorify these guys every day. Some of these boomer and silent gen directors that are still alive are doing another movie on a psychopath, on a sociopath. And it's interesting. I mean, it makes people, you know, people are interested in that.
Oh, look, this country is absolutely beside itself. And this is unpaid product placement. I haven't watched it. I don't know if I will.
But this country is absolutely beside itself watching something over on Netflix called Tiger King.
I've heard of that. And actually, I was thinking about whacking it myself. I ain't gonna lie. But I see your point. We love train wrecks. We love broken people. It makes us feel better about ourselves. But I would say we're with that guy, and I wasn't one of the people he ripped off, so I don't know. It's kind of like harmless, vicarious fun. But when you have people like Trump, or just some of the preachers that we play, we know not to listen to these guys. We know that they are train wrecks. And you're kind of telling us, you know, hey, beware, there's a bunch of nutcases out there. And I get that, but I don't know, what do we do about him? I mean, this brother, he's not getting time.
Well,
you know,
among other things,
people at his church,
people who live in Virginia and hear my voice need to send an email to the governor's office and say, I fully support, tweet at Governor Northam, whatever. I fully support the shutdown, and I implore you to send the Virginia State Police to his place of worship and show him that you can shut it down. And then make sure that the people that you catch in there aren't allowed out in public.
Well, didn't they do that with the Australian or the South African preacher?
Well, they arrested him and charged him with two counts. But he's arguing it, and he'll probably be back trying to keep the church open.
Yeah.
The freak in Baton Rouge had hundreds of people last night in his church in open defiance of an order of the governor of the state of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. But then again, we're talking about Louisiana. And I'm not going to bash Southerners. Screw that. That's stupid. That's really stupid. But how many warnings can people get? How many options do we have? You know, nobody's doing shit like Passenger Pigeon or Pony Express anymore. There are thousands of ways for people to have access to the information they should have. And yet we still have people like, I had to take my neighbor to Costco and Safeway today. Safeway is Kroger, I think, for you guys. She got paid on the first, so there was kind of no way of getting around it. And I have gloves from work, and I have some masks. She didn't want to wear a mask. It's just a dust mask. I've been using it for years, so I had some. But she didn't want to wear a mask, but she did wear the glove. But still, there were hundreds of people. And Costco is one of those, you know how you have Walmart, and then you have your Safeway, and here we have King Super. Those are the Safeway and King Super, Whole Foods, those are the nicer stores. And then, so then you have Costco, which is a nicer store. But then you have, like, Walmart and Sam's Club, which are train wrecks. And, you know, so Costco, they were doing the distancing, they were wiping down the carts, they were doing the best they could. We're passing by Walmart to go to Safeway. Everything's packed. You know, Costco even had a line. They were trying to be careful, so careful. Walmart, everybody, everywhere, cars filling up the parking lot, people just doing whatever, and nobody cares. And I guess all of that to say, I was talking about the South. I think, how many times can you tell people not to do things? How many times can you warn people? How many times, like with my neighbor, who literally couldn't help it, but I told her, I said, I'm so pissed at you because I don't want to be out here. But she didn't have a choice. So I get it. And I say that we talk about the preachers in the States. I'm circling back around. The airplane's about to land here. I'm just saying, I think, unless those people are getting in their cars and bringing that shit out to Colorado and stuff, which a lot of people are, what more can we do?
Well, I mean,
how many people have to die before?
I know where you are, and you know where you are, and we know, and we know that Colorado Springs is ground zero for some of the weirdest evangelical megachurch bullshit in this country.
It is, but it isn't.
I mean, you got the...
Because we have a lot of... Back in the 90s, forgive me, back in the 90s, when Dobson opened up his thing and started Amendment 2, which, you know, led to the gay rights movement, I mean, didn't lead to it, but that's when a lot of people really started noticing that this was an issue and that a lot of people came out of the woodwork and really, really started fighting. And I think that's what helped Colorado kind of not go completely astray. We have a lot of educated people here, a lot of healthy people. We like to attract those people, people who like to ride their bikes, people who like to hike. So among our population are a lot of people like that. And I think these are the type of people, and I know them because I've worked with them throughout. They either didn't vote for Trump or they did, and now they're very sorry. You know, they either didn't vote at all or they voted for Trump thinking, you know, what the fuck. And now they realize, wow, we made a mistake.
I'm game for that. By the way, you got a note from Tracy. I'm co-signing with Lady B on cutting a bitch, and I got the credit score to get it done.
Oh my God. But, what are you, 725? What you got, Tracy? What you got? Okay.
But I want to try to impress the gravity of why I shine a light on these freaks.
Sure.
Down in Lee County, and this was a few nights ago, we had the story. Down in Lee County, Alabama, the county seat's Opelika. It's also where Auburn University is, which is a huge university.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All of their COVID-19 cases have in common the fact that they had recently attended a large group gathering in a church. Not all in the same church, but they all went to church. And this spreads,
yeah.
This thing, you know, we were talking about the Fabergé organic shampoo commercial the other night. This isn't, you know, this isn't she tells one, two people and this is, this thing spreads one for three.
Yeah.
So if there were 56, and so if there were 56 cases out of those churches in Lee County, multiply that by three, then multiply that by three, then multiply that by three, and you see how bad it is. Now, you have a stay-home order in place, and that matters. But,
yeah.
But these Christian monsters don't care about stay-home orders. And what I'm afraid
of...
What I'm afraid of, Lady B, is that it only takes one group of fiends in an otherwise rational community to start spreading the plague through that otherwise rational community. If 100 people go into some scofflaw church in the Springs, then they're going to come out and it's going to turn into 300. The 3 is going to turn into 9. The 9 is going to turn into 2,700. And pretty soon you've got an actual problem on your hands. And that fact applies wherever you are in the United States.
But here's the thing, though, because, like, down south, you guys have, some of your areas pretty far spread out. In Colorado, it's kind of like that, too. But in the city, like, okay, New Life Baptist Church, 11,000, it holds 11,000 people. That's a big deal, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like way, though, on the outskirts. That's like a little past Air Force Academy. And there's still buildings and stores and stuff there, but those neighborhoods, you know, we don't bother with them folks. They're not right in the head. They have like 5 or 6 kids on the hip and talking about, you know, the anti-abortion stickers and, you know, Jesus is my co-pilot stuff on their car. Yeah,
but all they got, All they got to do is want to go to Costco, too, and the next thing you know, problem.
And that's the scary part, because there are Walmarts everywhere. A lot of those people, believe it or not, the people who are that religious who go to New Life, dude, those people have money.
Yes.
They are definitely middle class to upper middle class. So they're not, they shouldn't be stupid. But I think their faith just kind of blinds them to anything that resembles common sense.
Well, the prosperity gospel will do that to you, Lady B.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's why they think they're rich. And I'm like, no, it's not. You know, because your dad owned a business or whatever. That's why, you know. But I get it. And I know you got to wrap it up. But I was just saying, yeah, to call us things, it's got its moments, but it's not that bad. I don't listen to a lot of religious talk, so I don't know what the local, I don't even know who's heading New Life anymore. I want to say that Jeffries guy was there for a little bit. Because I remember Haggard, and I remember Jeffries, I think, Jeffers or something. And then, because I think Bush, that was Haggard. He used to talk to Bush once a week on the phone. Did you ever hear those stories?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were buddies.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, we've got our people that, I don't know, maybe I just stay on my side. I don't go up that way. Those are nicer neighborhoods. They're further north from where I am. I live closer to downtown. I get to see the homeless people all the time. But I'd like to think we're changing. I mean, electing a gay governor, that handful of haters in the Springs and in El Paso County or whatever, in those far-flung counties, they didn't win. You know, they didn't get what they wanted. So I'm hoping that we become more and more blue. I think Polis is trying to balance the fact that he does have a lot of very rich conservatives in his state, but he's also a gay man, and he kind of knows, you know, if I mistreat these folks here, I'm going to get mistreated. So I'm hoping that that's what he's going off of. You know,
well, and see, the other problem you've got in Colorado is you're kind of surrounded. Nebraska isn't taking
Nebraska.
Wyoming isn't taking it seriously.
Wyoming.
No, Kansas. Right, yeah. Kansas is getting it right. Let's be fair. They issued a stay at home, but Nebraska isn't serious. Wyoming isn't serious. Utah isn't serious. You share a little tiny common border with Oklahoma. They finally stopped being red and they became a not serious state instead of a fuck it state. And then, of course, immediately to your southeast is Texas.
And there's so many Texans. Texas and Californians just seem to love, hate Colorado. They get here, they ditch and vote, and I'm just like, well, why don't you just go back to Texas? I'm not being a bitch. I'm just asking you. Oh, no, I love it here. My job brought me here. Yeah, I take that. They did. But no, I mean, everybody's welcome except for the ones who carry in the disease. But yeah, you're right, dude. I hope that we can protect ourselves. But like you said, if you're surrounded by people who don't, then I don't know. I'm trying to keep my family home, my friends, you know, I'm trying to keep them home and I'm trying to keep like cool. And that's all I can do. That's all I can do then.
And by the way, apparently, that conniption that Joe Scarborough threw this morning that got Ron DeSantis moving. Well, Ron DeSantis got Brian Kemp moving in Georgia, and then he turned around and he got Colonel Trent Reeves of Mississippi moving, and he got Bill Lee moving in Tennessee. And so in the Confederacy, it's only Oklahoma, Arkansas, Alabama, and South Carolina that are in the not taking it seriously category.
Wow.
And Texas,
well,
of course.
People are going to have to move on, because it's one thing to, excuse me, that's not the Rona, that's my allergy. It's one thing to believe in something and disregard facts. But when you're surrounded by people.
What happened? Hold on. Well, damn it. Well, the gizmo gave up on me, but still, we got a great conversation in. And it's time to get out of here, and we will close things with $165 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge, courtesy of Laborman and Ralphs and our anonymous friend. And hopefully that'll happen. Maybe the overnight crew can pick up and run with that. Thanks to Tom and Sunny San Rafael. And thanks to Neil for jumping in and taking a bite out of it. Thank you so very kindly. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to each and every one who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so choose to do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you this evening in the chat room to Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe, y'all. Wash your hands. Wear a mask if it makes you feel better. And hopefully we'll get back at this tomorrow evening with Thorn in the Side Thursday. I can already feel them. Ouch. Later, y'all.